And I'm Matt Bull, and this is Questionable People, the podcast where Liz and I ask questions of people that we deem question-worthy.
Yes.
Is that a good way of describing it?
Yes.
For episode one?
We are questionable.
We also ourselves are questionable. That's
a good
point.
And then we ask questions to people. Mm-hmm. So they are questionable.
They themselves are questionable. Everyone involved is questionable.
Yes. It works because, you know, it's got two meanings.
At least two meanings. Have we counted?
I've just counted to two.
Okay. Only other thing to mention is that we don't actually know what the podcast is called in the conversation you're about to hear, so that you'll see why that's relevant later. Okay, without further ado, here is our first questionable person, which is you.
Yep. Enjoy.
Liz Golding. Well, thank you, Liz Golding, for taking another stab at our hypothetical podcast.
Yeah.
We're gonna call this the boundary button.
Okay.
So if any of my questions create discomfort, yes, go ahead. We have alcohol here. She's already reaching for it. You hit the boundary button, and I will make a note of it and go back and add a sound effect later. We'll move on to the next question.
Okay.
So let's just jump in. You got everything you need?
Yeah, I'm ready.
Okay.
Let's do it.
So I think it's important to establish for the audience the nature of our relationship. So I'm going to start by asking you, if you had to rate our friendship on a 0 to 10 scale, where 0 is like strangers and 10 is like the relationship that only like twins have, I'm very thick-skinned, so I think this is interesting to wrestle with, so give me a number.
I'm not sure 0 to 10 is an, it's like a, that's a two-dimensional scale.
Yeah.
Do you know? You know what I mean? So I'm not sure the number is gonna be, tell the whole story. I would say, I'd say 5? Yeah. I'm gonna put it right in the middle.
That was the number I had in mind.
I feel like we're friends.
Mm-hmm.
We text each other occasionally.
Very occasionally.
We see each other, like we'll run into each other, but then also sometimes we'll plan to hang out with spouses.
And then half the time that doesn't actually happen.
Yeah, but I don't feel like that's bad.
No, I don't either. I'm not, that wasn't a value statement.
No, like I don't, sometimes do you ever feel pressure, like I need to hang out with these people or like we're never gonna be friends? Like this is the window and we have to like solidify it?
Yes, absolutely.
I don't really feel like that.
No, this is a low pressure 5. Absolutely, yes. Like that is 100% where I was thinking.
Yes.
I thought that was interesting because I don't know the answers to a lot of these questions I have for you.
Okay.
We don't hang out a lot. We're not super tight. I like your husband. You like my wife a whole lot. And the other piece of this is that people in our shared circle who find us entertaining find us more entertaining together.
Together. Yeah. 1 + 1 is.
Yeah. So, and we're vain people and easily susceptible to flattery. So when people told us we should do a podcast, we were like, yeah, we'll just use the same decision-making rubric that the president uses and go with
just
doing what people say when they say nice things about us.
Yep.
Okay, cool. now I'm going to read you a list of possible names for this podcast that I would like you to tell me why they're terrible.
Okay.
The O'Reilly Factor.
The problem is, depending on who listens to this podcast, they may not know what the O'Reilly Factor is.
Everybody knows what the fucking O'Reilly Factor
is. You want to talk to the 20-year-olds I work with at coffee?
Is that our different demographic?
No idea. Probably not. But I'm just saying they have no idea.
Okay.
You asked for reasons why it's no good.
No, you know, I didn't say I wasn't going to argue back, but I do want you to shoot them down because are honestly all terrible, so.
Because then also, does one of us have to say, oh, really? Like, at one point during every podcast, and that feels like that's a lot of pressure.
Well, and that's been done, so.
Okay, then no.
But it's still a good title.
Mm-mm.
No, it's out, okay. Ersatz podcast.
What?
No. I was trying to think of a name, a word that rhymed with ersatz that was funny, and I couldn't, so I just went with ersatz.
No.
Okay, shit. The pillory.
I don't even know.
Okay, moving on. Conversaries.
Like no. We're having a conversation, but we're adversaries?
Yeah, yeah.
No, we're friends.
Okay.
We're friends, Matt.
The Malaise with Matt and Liz.
No, because I think if we, especially if we drink, there's not a lot of malaise.
Okay. This and That with Liz and Matt.
It's too cute.
Okay. We Like Us.
If we had a morning drive time show, we could call it This and That with Liz
and
Matt.
We could make it a podcast that we highly recommend people listen to on their commutes in the morning.
Okay.
We Like Us, to a point. I withdraw that one before without comment.
That, see?
This one is actually yours, and I love it, but I know that you hate everything you think of, so I'm going to ask you to shoot it down. Tepid Topic.
I mean, it is a good consonance.
That's all the positivity you can think of for what I think is a fucking brilliant name.
Yeah, that's all I got.
That was all.
That was it.
I thought my list was longer than that. all right, next question. Okay, this is the big one. I'm just going to jump straight into it. I'd like to ask you about your relationship with food.
Okay. I thought you were, like, making me nervous, and I thought you were going to ask me, like, why we didn't have kids.
No, I know better than that. Like that's something that, like, a 2 on the friendship scale would do that. I'm at least a 5. I know not to go there. I am going to ask you about your dog later, which
great.
I'm sure, like, has an overlap with that universe,
great.
And you're welcome to go into it if you choose, but it's not anywhere I'm going to press.
Great.
No, food. Your relationship with food. And as an outsider, seeing you, you know, hearing conversations with other people and seeing you post on social media, I mean, obviously everybody loves food. That's not necessarily unique, but you have the way that you care about food is more interesting, I think, than most people. So I'm going to just talk about that, and I'm going to poke holes in the things that you say because I'm sure you won't get to the heart of it.
Okay. So just talk about, like, why I, like, what I like about food, why I'm always posting stuff about food. I mean, I think that I always tell my nutrition students this because I teach nutrition at a community college, that I like food in every way, like in all kinds of ways, like all different types of levels. So when I was younger, it was, you know, it was like I didn't know how to cook anything, and I was 20 something and didn't feel that great, and so I learned how to watch what I eat, and it was kind of like more like calories in, calories out type stuff. And then when I was in grad school, I studied environmental science, and I became very interested in land use and sustainability and thinking about where our food comes from and what that does to the environment, and then also how that's wrapped up in what it does to us.
Mm-hmm. Which, and it's worth mentioning that, like, I think the first time I met you was at a community garden, actually. So.
Okay, that seems on brand.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
and then when I lived here, I got involved in slow food, so I did lots, and then I worked at Urban Acres, and so through all that, I got to meet a lot of people that are producers of food, and I find that very interesting and fascinating and also rewarding. And I got to eat a lot of really good food, and I didn't necessarily grow up. It's not like my mom didn't cook, but it was very much casseroles. We did a lot of eating out. She was busy.
Mm-hmm.
And so just a totally different way of eating.
Are you going to make me edit this mom criticism out of the podcast later?
No. Like, that was not a mom criticism.
Okay, all right.
I don't think that was a mom criticism.
Okay, she's going to be able to handle that low-level criticism. So I know there are ground rules to this podcast, and one of the fundamental ground rules is we can't offend your mom. So,
yeah, absolutely. Yeah, no, I think that's fine. I think she would fully admit, you know.
Cool.
Cooking was not on her top 10 list of favorite things to do. And then somewhere along the way, I got interested in nutrition and more like a personal aspect. But I think that that can be really myopic and can also become really unhealthy. Also had my own experiences with disordered eating when I was in my 20s. And so figuring out how to eat food in a way that I enjoy, but also makes me feel good, has been a long process.
See, that's, I'm interested to know that, but that also makes it harder to make fun of you. I have a lot of questions now that I have to cross out because now we have brought in the eating disorder.
I'm in a good place.
Okay.
I mean, we all,
but I would
know.
Need you to know that the questions were written before the eating disorder thing.
We got it.
Okay, cool. So one of the things that I think is interesting about how you approach food is you seem to be offended by food as often as you are enthralled by it.
I think that's how I think about everything.
Okay, that's fair. it's like
that's just a life philosophy, a way of being.
Okay. Let's talk about some foods that you're offended by.
Wait, can you give me an example?
I guess maybe it's food marketing, like as much as.
I mean, like, I find most food marketing to like be really offensive and atrocious.
Okay.
Because also.
Do you have access to any specific anger and rage on that topic?
I mean, usually when I watch the Super Bowl, it's like one of my yearly opportunities to check out commercials. I'm just not a consumer of commercials since I watch everything on Amazon and Netflix.
Yeah. Future sponsors.
Yeah. Hey, get at us. So I find a lot of those commercials offensive. You know, just selling people soda based on a feeling or like trying to like tie in patriotism with consuming soda. Like that's gross. So a lot of the ways marketers market food, I mean, it's that whole like you suck, your life sucks, and it would be better if you had these Doritos, you know? Like, that is just.
But do you really think that's not true?
Yeah, no, I don't think that's true.
Have you ever had Doritos, first of all?
Yes.
Have you ever had Doritos where they didn't make your life better?
I guess there's, like, a return on investment that goes down after you've eaten, like, half the bag. That's the problem.
Yeah.
Yeah. So I think that most people aren't eating.
So would it solve it for you if marketers, like, if they ran a Doritos commercial where it made somebody's life better and then they revisited that, like, in the same ad block toward the end as a person's, like, more than halfway into the bag and it's making their life worse at that point? Would that balance things out?
Or they, like, enjoy responsibly? Like, they need to have commercials like that? Is that what you're saying?
No, I'm saying, like, show the aftermath. Like, just so
they
so
should just be
it's
really
both sides
honest.
Of the story. Yeah.
Yes.
Like, you can show the Doritos making your life better part because that's true. And
yes.
That's accurate and how life actually works. And then, but as long as you show the seething regret that happens an hour after you finish the bag.
I'm honestly not sure that would keep people from eating any
No,
less.
I think I would buy more.
Yeah, I don't think that would stop people.
Yeah.
They would just be like, oh, relatable. That's very relatable.
Yeah. But does it solve your problem?
No.
No, damn it.
But, I mean, I know this threatens your
No, I'll go
profession.
Write this commercial next week. You're not my audience.
That's the thing is it's like when I watch all those commercials, I get mad. Oh, yeah. Like there's one that I actually do see because it comes on.
For context, I make commercials for
Netflix. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Sorry, go ahead.
You're an ad man. There's this one for I don't know if we're going to get sued by Johnsonville Brats.
Ooh,
it's a commercial. It's a commercial that I hear.
I pitched them once.
And the whole time, it's this woman and she's talking about her own commercial.
Yes.
She imagined it.
Oh gosh, are you going to make fun of this commercial?
And she just says, then the fireman shows up and says, Johnsonville Brats are made in the USA. Like their whole thing that they are so fucking proud of is that they make their sausages in the country that we live in. Like, that is their point of pride. And their, so their meat's not put together in a casing in China.
Yeah.
Like, that's it.
Should they not be proud of that, Liz?
I just think that that's an incredibly low bar. and I'm not sure that's, like, advertising worthy. But apparently it is. Because nobody knows where their food comes from. And so, you know.
That's a very interesting point. So would you be more or less likely to buy Johnsonville brats if they like said in the ads that they were imported from Chinese cows?
Less.
Okay.
I'm not going to buy them either way, I guess, though. Okay. There's all no, right. You know, like I get my sausage from like the local.
Yes, that is a very on-brand list.
You know, yeah, again, that.
So this helps because I had the sense that food is almost, to you, is like a person that you had, I don't want to use, the unhealthy is the wrong, is a too loaded a word, but a complicated relationship with where you were inextricably intertwined, and that person had also hurt you deeply.
Yeah, like food's the person. Yes, and it had hurt but I also can't live without it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's.
I'd say that's true.
Okay.
But I think we've come a long way.
When you say we,
food and I.
You and food.
Food and food and I.
How much of that work was done by food?
Well, that's unfortunate because not a whole lot.
it's not a balanced relationship.
Just
is that what you're saying?
I did all the work.
You did.
Shit.
Still an unhealthy relationship, Liz.
Yeah. What a deadbeat.
You need to rethink this. Yeah. Food is a deadbeat. Fucking food.
Yep.
You used to be sort of a part-time vegetarian.
Oh, I was a vegan.
Were you?
Yeah.
I may not have known you then.
When I met Brian, my husband, I was vegan. And I was very strict vegan for about a year in that I would ask questions, was very careful not to eat any animal products. And then I would say for the next 5 years after that, I was mostly vegan, and I'm sure most vegans would say that's like saying you're part pregnant, like you're either vegan or you're not. But I ate locally, like eggs from people I knew, or like when I was at events and there was cheese that had been, you know, made here with cows from here, I would eat that sometimes.
Okay.
But that was pretty much it, so.
And then so you're no longer vegan?
Correct. Yeah, I literally, like on the way, at 3 o'clock today, I had pork ribs for a snack.
But you didn't go straight from vegan to pork ribs.
No, I was a pescatarian for a little while.
Okay.
I did try that for a little while. And then...
was this like food working in the boundaries of your comfort zone and like being an abusive boyfriend and drawing you into something you weren't comfortable with? Is that how this shift happened or was...
Well, part of it is it's like a sliding... It's a slippery slope, right? Like once you start eating fish, why am I eating fish? Because fish isn't from here and fisheries are terribly depleted most of the time. And sourcing fish and knowing where your fish comes from is incredibly complicated. And half the time it's changed hands a few times and you might think it's coming from somewhere, but someone lied somewhere along the way. And so you're not, you know. And so, so I just decided, and I wasn't sure if I wanted to, like if I started eating meat, that would be like a forever thing, but I just decided that I was gonna try it. And that was 2.5 years, a year and a half ago.
And how is that going?
I mean, I enjoy it a lot. There's a,
What about eating meat do you like?
I hate being this person, but it's delicious. I mean, I find it satisfying in a way that other foods aren't always. I've read a couple of articles about women butchers that were former vegans, and I, you know, it kind of seems like a...
You should start a band with them.
Well, that's a fun story, right, to write about, but I guess I get it. Because I think a lot of people stop eating meat because they're uncomfortable with eating animals, and so they decide they don't want to participate in that, and I think that's a totally valid way to be. And then I think sometimes some people, if you get back into eating meat, then you want to go all the way and like understand what you're doing. Like if you're going to do it, you want to know what you're doing. And so I think that's how people get there.
So we've established that like in terms of the culinary fullness of your life, this was a good decision? How has there been an emotional consequence of?
No, I mean, I definitely, I get. This is where it's like about other people's stuff and not me.
Yeah,
but
sure.
People that eat meat, they get really excited.
Don't they?
It's yeah, funny. And they like you came. They literally will say stuff welcome back.
We are fundamentally colonizers as carnivores. It's true for me too. I don't understand it. I should probably do some therapy.
Yeah, you should unpack that.
I should. You can ask me about that next week if you need to. But there is something inappropriately validating about welcoming a non-carnivore back into...
Oh, I just think people like to know that the things they're doing are okay, right? And so that if you weren't eating meat and you start eating meat, then not eating meat must be bad. Like, you must have... That didn't work out, so meat eaters must be right.
Yeah.
I think that's what that's about.
That's such a simple-minded explanation for something that feels so much more profound to me.
Well, you can think on it and get back to me. But on the flip side, I feel like my vegetarian friends kind of look at me like, oh, you left us.
Yeah.
Like kind of puzzled. Yeah. Like there's a space between us now that there didn't used to be. So that's interesting. And the only big thing I've noticed, like nutritionally, is I still love chocolate and like heavy desserts, mm-hmm. but I used to like want them all the time.
Oh, interesting.
And now I don't need them. And now I didn't used to understand why people might want like lemon cake. Like I just didn't understand wanting, or like key lime pie. That was like, just why would you choose that?
Yeah.
And now I get it. Okay. Like, now I understand wanting to have, like, a refreshing dessert.
Got it. You're not just a nutrition professor. You also teach biology, so I'll just throw this, in case you have a point of view on this. Do you... So I have this belief founded at least partly in evidence, I hope, that the more I change my diet, the more my gut flora changes, which affects my cravings, and so that in some sense, I feel like what I am hungry for is me being a puppet for my biome, my bacterial biome. Is that something you think about? Like, as you have...
I don't know enough about the science to tell you that one way or the other. The things you do eat do change your gut biota.
Yeah.
So that's true. Maybe you're just a slave working for your bacteria, and they're in charge.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, that's possible.
I think it's highly likely.
I tell my students to maybe think about it like...
I mean, I'm outnumbered, like, what, 9 to 1,
well,
10 to 1?
Well, it's a farm, or they're your pets. You can think about it however you want, and you want them to be happy. And so you want to feed them good stuff.
Yeah.
But also, a lot of the stuff that came out 5-10 years ago about gut bacteria... It's not being walked back, but like they're like, oh, maybe that wasn't the whole story, because that's always.
I used to read up.
I don't know
the
specifics
all the time.
I just know that, like, you know, some people were like, oh, this is it. Now that we know about, you know, it's like that's how everything is in science.
Sure.
They discover something new, and they're like, this is it. Now we're gonna know everything we need to know. This is the answer. And then 10 years later, they're like, oh, it's a little more complicated than that. And turns out we don't understand all the ways in which it works. And it really maybe depends on the person. And it depends on their history and then their genes. And
I like your, you have an excellent mocking the scientific hoi polloi voice. That's pretty great.
Yeah.
I hope that makes an appearance regularly in this podcast in the future. So food pet peeves, like, I want to go back to that, because I feel like there's more than just the advertising side of it. I feel like you get, like, you can get, like, viscerally upset about foods being either prepared or eaten incorrectly, or even just, like, I know you have some animosity toward...
You make me sound like a religious zealot.
You kind of are in this area. Not one who has grown, who has left some zealotry behind... Nevertheless, so like there are certain fruits that I feel like you hate irrationally.
No, you are taking a Facebook conversation like way out of context.
You hate raspberries and you're wrong.
No, I asked people to name their least favorite fruit.
You said the worst fruit.
The worst fruit.
That is a very different question than the least favorite.
There has to be a worst. Maybe you still like it, but like on the spectrum.
I think it was a little, I think it would not, had that question been on a scientific survey or political poll, the other side would have called bullshit for loaded phraseology.
I actually think that
what
that
do you
whole
have
thread
against raspberries?
Changed my, I think I came around to having a different opinion on what the answer was.
You started where, raspberries?
I started with the raspberries,
which
just
is,
because I find
which
in
is
general,
enraging.
In general, I find raspberries to be meh. I don't know. They're my,
I'm going to hit the boundary button. This is, I need
to You're uncomfortable. They're just not, they're my least favorite berry, for sure.
Okay, let's just move to what you moved towards, because this is difficult for me.
Someone convinced honeydew melon. When honeydew melon is good, it is delicious, yeah. But that's like 10% of the time.
You're right.
And 90% of the time, it's mealy.
You're right.
And flavorless and gross.
Yep. Yeah.
I think that's the thing, is really good raspberries are great, but a lot of times they're tart and not adding a whole lot. That and someone else convinced me, kiwis.
Yeah.
Kiwis.
Kiwis are a crapshoot.
I would be okay if I didn't eat a kiwi ever again. That's fine.
So here's what I think about kiwis. I think kiwis, there are certain fruits that are terrible mixed with other fruits, and my strongest opinion of that is pineapple. Like, I don't think pineapple belongs in fruit salads.
It's a very strong flavor. It's
great when it's ripe and on its own, or like in savory dishes, and those are or in desserts on its own. But you mix it with any other fruit and it ruins the other fruit. Like, that's what but kiwi is the inverse pineapple for me. It goes in certain fruit salads.
It's the last thing I eat in the fruit salad, and I would probably leave it. Like, I would eat everything else and just leave the kiwi.
You're right. This is your interview. I need to do some personal work on the side.
I'm trying to think what other fruits we talked about being the worst fruit.
Well, yeah.
Like bad
grapes.
Apples are gross. I like grapes a lot. And I think even mediocre grapes are pretty good.
Really?
Like the spectrum of like good grape, like they don't have lots of variation. Like they're all pretty okay. Wouldn't you say? Like I've never.
Yeah, I could get on board with pretty good.
I have never had a grape I've been like, whoa, this is like the most amazing fruit I've ever had. But I also very rarely bite into a grape and go, ugh.
See, I've done that.
They're like fine.
Yeah.
Grapes are fine.
That's true.
They're very consistent.
That's true. It's not like.
That's what I'm trying to say is that like raspberries.
Jackfruit or durian or something.
Raspberries vary.
Mm-hmm. Grapes
honeydew
are consistent.
Honeydew really varies. Kiwis are just bleh.
Okay. I'm going to read you a passage from The Bell Jar by Sylvia Plath.
I haven't read that.
It's fine. I'm just going to read you. This is a food-related passage.
Okay.
And I just want you to react in an honest and visceral way to it.
Okay.
She writes, she's reminiscing here. This is a scene where she is at some New York, function where they're feeding them all avocado and crab salad, and she loves it. Later, she gets food poisoning, almost dies from it. But she's talking about how much she loves avocados, and she reminisces about her childhood. And she says, avocados are my favorite fruit. Every Sunday, my grandfather used to bring me an avocado pear hidden at the bottom of his briefcase under 6 soiled shirts and the Sunday comics. He taught me how to eat avocados by melting grape jelly and French dressing together in a saucepan, and filling the cup of the pear with the garnet sauce. I felt homesick for that sauce.
Wait, can you read that again? Just the part about how they'd eat it.
He taught me how to eat avocados by melting grape jelly and French dressing together in a saucepan, and filling the cup of the pear, that's the avocado pear, with the garnet sauce. I felt homesick for that sauce.
I mean, my initial reaction is that sounds disgusting and it sounds like an abomination. However, I also would like to try it.
We should.
That's why. Can you have French dressing?
As far as I know, yeah.
I'm sure we can find some sort of dairy free version if you can't. I don't think
and
it's
you
not.
Know, I'll roll the dice for a Sylvia Plath based culinary experiment. But let's get back to your vision. Like, if I could describe the face you were making while I was reading that passage, it was very much a genuine stifling a gag reflex.
It was just a little shocking. Like, that's just not what I would. That is not in my realm of, like, how one eats an avocado.
Does it make you question why Sylvia Plath still has a place in the literary canon at all when she is capable of writing such vile prose?
No. But I also have a soft spot for weird things. Like, I might think something's gross, but that's a weird family tradition, okay. And she thinks very fondly of it.
Okay.
So...
Do you think her fondness for horrifying avocado preparations had any bearing on her suicide? Or the kind of moral person that she was?
No, because I'm not commenting on why one commits suicide.
You see, I would be willing to entertain that possibility.
Or does it? No, that feels dangerous. That feels dangerous for a podcast. That's how we get sued, for real. It does sound gross, though.
She's dead.
Also, was
she's
it
not
going to
sue us?
Was it salted at all? Because those she are two not, very sweet
she
things.
She does not mention salting.
So.
Okay, let's switch gears. I think we covered food for the most part.
I'm going to be thinking about that recipe.
Okay, next time we'll make it
okay.
Live.
Okay.
We'll describe the cooking process, the smells. Get like a hot plate in this little booth.
We don't have to. Oh, they cooked it.
Is this
they
a cooking
the sauce.
Podcast?
They cooked the sauce.
Yeah, they
you
cooked
said
the sauce.
That. That's even stranger.
I see. I thought I was expecting more. Like, you defended her more than I. This is very, that was off brand for you, Liz.
I think I really had to think about it.
Okay.
Maybe we're going to try it. It's going to be delicious.
You're so generous.
I'm trying.
Okay, I want to talk about career now. So, we've already mentioned that you are a professor of biology and a professor of nutrition.
Yes, but I do not have any certifications in nutrition. So, I get to teach it because it's in the biology department. Anyway.
Yes. So you are a professor. You are also a barista.
Mm-hmm.
Which, like, at the same time, which of those jobs do you consider your real job?
I would say the job people understand the most is being a professor.
That's not the question I asked.
I know, but I'm gonna work my way through that by not directly answering
I know
it.
The answer to this question, and I don't think...
I guess I've always thought about teaching as my primary job, just because it's the one that, like, is more appropriate to being in my mid-30s. And having a master's, like, that's the one that, like, again, it makes sense for people. But being a barista is fun.
I think that is your real job.
You do?
And I think that's fantastic.
Interesting.
No, because, so I remember you say, I may have warped this into my own narrative, like, satisfying narrative, but I remember a time when you were offered at your teaching job to become, like, what, department head or something?
No, okay, definitely
sorry.
Not. It was, like, a administrative job.
Oh, see, that doesn't fit the story.
Yeah, sorry.
That's okay.
No, I was
see, but
definitely
you turned down like some kind of promotion because it impinged on your ability to barista more. That's the story I told myself about you.
Yeah, that is a story you told yourself.
So you probably, forgive me, but one of the oldest baristas in town.
Oh, there are older ones, but they own their own businesses.
Yeah,
And
I should clarify that you're not, by any stretch, like, I'm far older than you. I won't say any numbers, but...
Oh, well, I was going to, how old are you?
I'm 43.
I'm 36.
It's, you know, 7 years is substantial.
Yeah, if I were 43, I would wish I was 36, so that's fair.
Yeah. So would you say that that age difference in you and your coworker baristas is the biggest cultural divide that you experience in your barista job, or?
Probably, but sometimes it's not. Some people, just because you're 20, not all 20-year-olds act the same.
Okay.
But I do find there is definitely a divide there. Like, every 2 or 3 weeks, something comes up in which it's painfully obvious that I am much older. Like, one time, everybody was talking about SpongeBob.
Yeah.
And I was like, yeah, like, I know who SpongeBob is, but I've never seen SpongeBob. And they were all like, oh, have you never seen SpongeBob? That's crazy. And I was kidding, but I said, well, I'm sure I was in high school. But I was exaggerating, like, surely I'm not that old. And then I looked it up, and I was in high school. And I was like, yeah, I was in high school. And they all looked at me like that was, like, whoa. Like, that was the first time they'd really grasped how much older I am. I mean, but that happens to me at school, too. But it's because I'm teaching 20-year-olds, not working with them. But, like, I'll try to make some sort of analogy that's about pop culture.
I have thought about that before. That's super, you're like, the same people that are your coworkers in one job are your students in another job? You've a lot of complicated schisms in your internal psychology.
I think the best part is I've had lots of people tell me it's not a big deal and I need to get over it, and I want to be like, you fucking try it and get back to me. Yeah. It is interesting though. Working at Houndstooth, I like really enjoy all the people that work there, and that sounds really cheesy, but those are some of the people I actually see outside of work.
I mean, I go to coffee shops just to hang out with baristas, so yeah, I get that.
I like my coworkers at school too, but we don't necessarily all hang out because they're all just kind of all over the place.
So would you say the age divide there is a bigger divide than you being in the minority of baristas in Dallas that don't see baristing primarily as a vehicle for sharing the love of Jesus Christ with people? I got to note the time there, 44:30. Liz hit the boundary button, so I got to put that on 44:30. I got to add that sound effect there. And we'll move on. Okay, so moving past baristering to the world of art. I think if most people who had just met you and had a conversation with you were to imagine your, like, say, tastes in film, they would assume, say, like, French New Wave or...
They would be very wrong.
Yeah.
Very wrong.
Your favorite film franchise is?
Fast and Furious?
Yes, it is.
I mean,
that's what I was looking for.
Also, the Mission Impossible movies are fantastic. I like big, loud, boom movies where people run around and chase each other and they shoot at each other and they punch each other. I don't like, there are really bad action movies and I'm not necessarily interested in that, but like a mediocre and up action movie, I'm in.
Tell us about Darcy.
Darcy is my dog. She is 12. I adopted her when she was 2 years old, and she's a very good bad dog. So she's smelly and a little unruly, but not too unruly. She's a terrier, so she's kind of an asshole.
What percentage of your social media feeds would you say Darcy consumes?
33% of my Instagram stories.
Have you done this math?
No, it was just rough.
I think that was...
Which is like a third my dog, a third food, and then a third... You think it's more than a third?
Liz.
You think it's half? More than half.
Liz.
I also have photos from the gym, because I'm that jerk.
Yeah.
And then the food.
Yeah.
And at Christmas, there's like Santa.
Yeah.
But you think it's more than half?
I think it's a lot more than half.
Fine.
Okay.
Two-thirds.
These aren't judgmental questions. I'm interested in accuracy. If you were faced with some sort of horrifying Sophie's Choice type decision between Darcy and Brian, your husband,
like to save?
Yeah,
I would save Brian.
Oh, I'm relieved to hear that. I wasn't sure coming in. which
I
way
love
that would
him.
Go. I mean, he's more likely to listen to this podcast than Darcy is, so
I love him more than I love my dog.
Caveating your response heavily.
I love my dog. My dog is great, but I love him more.
Okay. That's a relief.
Yeah.
So at some point, Darcy won't be with us anymore. And there will be, you know, a mix of emotions that you have to confront at that point.
Yes.
What percentage of those emotions would you guess would be relief?
It probably depends on how sick she is when she dies.
No, I mean, like let's just say she's gone tomorrow.
Relief? None. Why would I feel relieved?
Okay, I feel like you've played up the asshole aspect of Darcy's personality then in our conversations maybe more than is accurate. You've painted Darcy to be a tyrant, like a tyrant who runs the household.
Oh, but she's so cute. We love it. She barks at us to feed her. She brought in some sort of bone from the backyard, and I don't know where they come from.
So 5%?
Relief?
Yeah.
No.
Less than that?
None.
None.
If she were suffering at the end, that would be different.
That's not the question.
No, none. Okay. No relief. Okay. I'll be wearing black for a month.
Okay. Okay. Okay, so here, there's a topic we need to address, and it's going to require circling back to food. But first, we have to talk about Ted Cruz, who is the elephant in this room. Ted is currently, in case you're listening, you know, 10 years in the future, and you're some sort of archaeologist,
standing on the
podcast
destroyed
ashes
of our civilization.
He is currently rerunning for election in Texas in the U.S. Senate. I forget who his opponent is.
Beto?
Never heard of him. this isn't about that guy. This is this conversation about why Ted Cruz is unqualified to represent the fine state of Texas. And I feel like everybody hates Ted Cruz. I mean, I think we're sick. But the way that everybody loves food, but you love food more, everybody hates Ted Cruz, but you hate Ted Cruz more, is a topic that we need to discuss. I know you have some very, very deep animus for the man. And I just would like to give you a chance to unpack that for us. Why, what, if you had to pick one thing about Ted Cruz that is the worst thing about him?
What would it be?
Yeah.
Of all the things?
Of all of the things.
That are off-putting?
Yes.
All of the policies he has.
Pick
the way he talks. The way he's conducted himself lately. Out of all that.
All of it.
He doesn't like avocados. And I have a problem with that.
And you have a very deep and abiding and long-term problem with that. We should just, full disclosure, this is not an ad for your bumper sticker business, but Liz sells bumper stickers that say Ted Cruz hates avocados. You've also written, you wrote for...
I wrote like a 500-word piece for The Observer, the mm-hmm. Dallas Observer.
Yeah. This was years ago, right?
Yeah. Yeah.
So this is a long-standing
You want
issue.
To know the real reason why I feel this way?
Mm-hmm.
I find it the most enjoyable way to talk about why I can't stand him. Like, I find it hilarious, but also there's, like, a truth in there that obviously speaks to me. I think Ted Cruz doesn't really understand other people. He doesn't understand their plight. He seems to truly have a hard time putting himself in a variety of people's shoes. He seems to be interested in representing a very small sliver of our state. And I find the way he talks about other people in our state that don't agree with him offensive. So I find talking about how he doesn't like avocados and he must have to sit alone at the table when he gets together with his, like, extended family and they're all eating guacamole and, like, hanging out and laughing. I just imagine them, like, putting their heads back and laughing. Ha, 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 ha. And he, like, doesn't know how to laugh. I'm not sure he understands how jokes work. Like, based on the way his campaign has been working, I do not think they understand how a joke works. Because he doesn't understand people. He doesn't understand their hopes and their dreams and their fears and how Texas is full of a lot of different types of people. He just doesn't understand. And so I just imagine him, like, how do you not, like avocados. Seems, it's just, it confuses me. And so I don't think he can understand like what it is to truly be a Texan because he's not immersed in that.
So I knew that you felt this way about both avocados and Ted Cruz, and I have something for you. So you know that I do. So I write ads professionally.
Yep.
I'm also like on the side. I do voiceovers for for some ads. So I have a Ted Cruz attack ad for you that I'd like to play for you. I wrote and voiced myself, and I think now is the time for you to hear it.
As Texans, we agree on one thing. Avocados are delicious. It's plain truth to all of us. All of us, except Ted Cruz. It's true, Ted Cruz hates avocados, and you can Google it. So ask yourself, can a man's moral center exceed his palate? To what other important issues does Ted Cruz bring the same lack of clarity? What other good and right options cause Ted disgust? Can a man who recoils at the finest of the Lord's bounty be trusted to give his finest to Texas? And isn't there a kind of wry symmetry in the way Ted Cruz feels about avocados and the way everyone who has ever worked with Ted Cruz, Republican and Democrat alike, feels about Ted Cruz? Ted Cruz, wrong on avocados. Wrong for Texas. Paid for by Ted Cruz Hates Avocados.
It's beautiful. I feel like I want to cry. You're like, so amazing.
I had pictured some reactions, but you actually were tearing up and did not expect that one.
It's everything I could ever want in an attack ad. It speaks to so many things. It's beautiful.
Thank you. I appreciate that. Mm-hmm. I was proud of it.
Are we going to put it up somewhere?
Sure. It's yours. It's yours. Do with it what you will.
We should put it out there.
Sure. Let's figure it out.
Okay.
That's all I got.
Awesome.
That was Questionable People, episode one.
One of hopefully many.
Mm-hmm. Tune in next time for episode two, in which Liz asks questionable person number two, which is me.
Yep, I have not written any of those questions yet, I'm sure gonna get to work on that.
The world's lowest pressure podcast.
Yep. But in the meantime, we decided to go ahead and put up the audio of the Ted Cruz ad so that you can listen to it at your leisure. You can share it with your friends.
You can remix it into an anti-Beto ad if you feel like. I mean, we're not going to stop you. It's yours.
Yeah, but that way you don't have to listen to the entire podcast just to listen to it.
That's right. That's at questionablepodcast.com is where you can find that. All right. Thanks. Bye.
Thanks.